Ed, welcome to Waterstones.
Thank you very much.
This is not a usual interview, but we're here to talk about Glutton, and I thought it would be very bad hosting if I didn't provide you with some kind of repast.
You're correct.
I thought we'd put an element of jeopardy in as well. So there's going to be, you're going to have to gamble here.
Yeah.
On each level, there are two options. You're going to be choosing A or B.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with this one first because, well, it was hot. It may not be hot anymore.
But oh, this is fantastic.
You
this
have
is great
to choose
hosting.
Option A or B on the first course here. What okay. are you going to go for?
Oh, so I choose.
You choose.
I'm choosing blind.
Yep.
Though. I'll go with option A.
Option A. So this was going to be way more complicated, but I couldn't get one of the things. So in fact, everyone will recognise this kind of box.
Yeah.
And it was a question of whether you were going to get the pizza or the dough ball. So you've ended up with the pizza. But
okay.
It's, like, it's the world's smallest pizza.
That is tiny.
Isn't it cute? It's called a piccolo. It's for kids, really.
Yeah.
But I thought, given the time we've got together, not to go too overboard. We need to talk about pizza.
Yes.
It features very heavily in your life and
yeah.
indeed in the book. Please help yourself to a slice of
Thank
piccolo.
You. I'd say it features less pizza. Heavily in my life these days.
These days.
Yeah, it used to feature a lot more heavily in my life.
Here is a tiny pepperoni pizza. You, of course, have polished off not one, not two, not three, but four
in a day.
Pizzas in one day.
I'm going to have a bite.
Do it, have a bite. Mm. I'm going to have a cheeky dough ball with some
yeah.
garlic butter.
Pizza Express, man. That taste. I think people are too down on Pizza Express these days.
Well, Rachel, behind the camera, was a bit down on Pizza Express earlier on, and I had to issue a corrective.
Yeah.
It's there's nothing wrong with it. That's why it's still going all these years later.
But I think maybe it's nostalgia. I think it tastes fantastic, but it tastes like swimming to me. Do you know what I mean? Like, it tastes like I've just been swimming and that's what I'm having after swimming.
Is that your post-swimming?
Yeah, I think it must be. I think that's why I connect swimming to it. Otherwise, it'd be a very odd thing to happen.
Yeah.
It just tastes like I'm a kid and I've just done an activity. But I think it's fantastic. I'm annoyed with Rachel, to be honest.
Well, I feel as though we might need a drink to go with. We might have to skip to a drink. We'll cover all of these things through our chat.
Yes.
So there are two drinks in this next box.
Yeah.
Again, option A, option B. What are you going to go for?
Maybe I'm just going to go option A across the board. Maybe that's the best way of doing it. I'll go option A.
This is very interesting. Okay, so option A gave you the glass of red wine as opposed to the pint of Guinness. We're going to talk about both.
Yeah.
But I do just want you to have something to sip.
Now, I did admit before we started recording that I am hungover today.
And that's why I'm here to help.
I drank so much wine yesterday.
Would you rather have something soft?
I mean, I'll hold it and talk about it. But we'll see what happens if I have one tiny sip of this.
Do you think it would be bad?
We're on that part of a hangover where if I have a sip, it could be like absolute pure disgust.
Yeah.
Or it could start me having that whole glass of wine to get over the fact I had many glasses of wine yesterday.
Sometimes it can help. Sometimes.
Tell me more about the red wine that you've bought for the podcast.
What wine do you think would go well with a pizza from Pizza Express?
Well, I guess Italian, but you know, is it one of the sort of big heavy Italians? Are we talking Barolo?
My God, I wish our budget extended to Barolo. I see. Again, for you were mentioning that this means swimming to you.
Mm.
To me, it means a meal out with my parents.
Yes,
like as a family, at which they would always get a bottle of Montepulciano di
Luzzo, yeah,
which is what that is.
It's very tasty.
I have a Guinness here. We have a lot to talk about here. But let's begin with the pizzas.
Mm.
Please explain to me how it's even physically possible to eat four pizzas in a day.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a memory that I unlocked as I was writing the book. And I would say that it was, you know, it was quite horrifying having to relive the whole thing. And it was a longer part of the book than I anticipated it would be. I used to have pizza for breakfast quite regularly when I was at university.
Yep.
So I would have some pizza then. And then it was a pizza for lunch, and then a pizza pre a show I was doing, a sketch comedy show, and then went out and got drunk and had a pizza at night as well. And I only realised it was my fourth pizza of the day as I was eating it, and it wasn't a great feeling.
Most nutritionists, I think, would say that one pizza a day is quite a lot of pizza.
Yes.
Particularly in America, you have those gigantic deep pan pizzas. Mm. And I think Papa John himself said, you're not supposed to eat the whole pizza.
Was he
yourself.
A real guy?
Oh, he's a real man.
Because I did posit that in the book as to whether he was a real man or
I
not.
I think he is. I don't know whether... I don't think his name is Papa John. I think he must be John something.
John something, and he's someone's
but
Papa.
But he set up... Yeah. Yeah, he set up the business.
I thought he was just, like, branding.
I think he's real, but obviously it's just a franchise business, right?
So I'm trying to work out if it's libel or slander what I've said in the book.
Do you not have legal take?
No. Weird, right?
If you're out there, Papa, we're big fans.
Apologies, Papa. I'm not. I think that his pizza's absolutely dreadful. Papa John's probably like lowest of the low.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
And then Pizza Express. We shouldn't lie.
No, Pizza I love Express. Pizza Express.
Although I paid for it. They didn't provide it for free, so they don't get any free advertising.
Yeah, sort of.
But yeah, you ate four pizzas in a day, which is quite a feat for anybody, but let alone somebody who, like myself, suffers from type 1 diabetes.
Yes.
That's quite an undertaking.
Yeah, but I think even one pizza as a type 1 diabetic is quite a lot of admin, so you may as well just throw another three on top of it.
Can I just say that you, in your book, have actually provided me with a piece of diabetic advice.
Have I?
Yeah, which I don't think anybody's given me properly. So therefore...
Tell me what it was, and then I'll tell you if it's actually good advice or I was putting it in there for a laugh.
No, I like pizza, yeah. And I'm not about to give it up because of being type 1 diabetic, mm-hmm. but you point out that if you're eating what is effectively a slow-release carb, yeah. like pizza dough, that you can get yourself into trouble, which is you take your... take your insulin.
Yeah,
it can send you crashing.
Yeah,
because you've taken it for the whole pizza, and it'll take a while for that to come in, and then you'll go back up again.
Yeah,
that happens to me all the time, and I wasn't until you said take half your insulin, eat the pizza, then take the other half.
Split
and
dose. It's the best way to do it because otherwise you end up, especially if you're eating pizza in the evening.
Yeah,
blood sugars shoot up overnight, and then you're in trouble. So it's best to split the dose a little bit.
I think that makes you Dr. Gamble. Now.
Yes, I think so. Wow, my next book is going to be by Dr. Gamble.
Terrible medical advice from somebody with no training. No, but it's genuinely helpful. It was very useful for me to read that.
Yeah, because having pizza as a diabetic is like an obstacle course, but it is worth it.
It's so
worth it. Not all the time, and certainly not for a day, but it is worth it now and again to have a pizza.
In fact, a lot of your book is about finding sort of joy in less of things, mm-hmm. whereas when you were a kid, you were clearly like...
Yeah, I want everything all the time, just in case I would ever be in a situation where I couldn't have that thing again. That's what my brain used to do. Be like, you've got to eat all of this now.
Yeah.
Because what if you never get a chance to have this again?
Yeah.
Whereas exactly. There's pizza. There's pizza everywhere. Yeah. So
it wasn't the peril you thought it was.
Yeah, exactly. Just enjoy the quality of something.
Yeah. Let's move a little bit to talk about drinks now. We have two very different drinks here.
Yes.
But they both feature in the book. As I take a sip of Guinness, I would like you to tell me why Guinness is different to almost all beers.
Yeah.
And why it holds a special place in your heart.
Well, what I would say is I love Guinness, probably when it's been poured a little better than that has been.
How?
Draft Guinness. I mean, that to me looks like that's a can of Guinness,
that's
right?
That's a bottle of Guinness.
A bottle of Guinness,
it's not even a can of draft Guinness.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just think it's magical stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the look of it in the pint, it's sort of... I can dream about how Guinness looks, and I think a lot of it is because I'm a total like advertiser's dream. Like I imagine the slow motion in the mm-hmm. advert and the sort of the creaminess of the Guinness and the way it clouds and then settles. But I think it tastes like unlike anything else as well, and I can glug that stuff. I can truly glug Guinness.
I am also an advertiser's dream to the point where I associate it with rugby now. Mm. So whenever the rugby's on, as it is in the moment with the World Cup, I'm like, we should get some Guinness.
We should get some Guinness,
Like a little robot, I go off to the shop and come back with Guinness.
Also, I've noticed that if I go to the pub with my friends and I have a Guinness, and I'm not sure I even put this in the book, actually, but I always say it's one of my most boring things that I say, everyone else will eventually end up having a Guinness, even if they've not thought about having a Guinness. Guinness spreads like a yawn. So you have a Guinness, and then someone's like, I think I fancy a Guinness, actually. No other drink does that.
No. I have seen that happen as well.
Yeah.
You sit and you kind of go, oh, yeah, go on then.
So just to let you know what situation I'm in, I went for lunch with some friends yesterday.
Yeah.
And we drank a lot of wine. Like, we have these lunches maybe once a month where we'll all bring a bottle as well to the restaurant and, you know, get excited about the wine. Drank far too much wine. And then we went to the pub and I had two pints of Guinness. So this is a flashback.
Is your nightmare.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for giving me this opportunity.
Yeah. I also loved the fact that you said that you're one of those people who sort of repeats these things that you've heard about Guinness. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you have to sort of pour it, of course, and then let it settle and then do the other. bit at the top, and then you can only get good Guinness in Ireland.
Yeah, yeah, and I was saying that before I went to Ireland.
But you're honest about the fact that really you can't tell the difference when drinking.
I drink Guinness anywhere, to be honest. Anywhere I go. But like there's pubs that I will, if I'm in London, I'll be like, I'll go there for a nice pint of Guinness.
Yeah.
But I would also happily go to a different pub on the way that has no sort of recommendation or reputation for quality of Guinness and have one there and enjoy it just as much.
You would drink Guinness in a travel lodge,
yes,
wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think I probably have.
I saw a clip actually of Guinness being poured back in the day in Ireland. So I have a theory, which is that the whole pouring it, stopping it, and then re-pouring it is nonsense.
Yeah.
And watching this video, this keg shot out Guinness at a rate I've never seen. And there were two different barrels.
Yeah.
One was for the frothy bit, and then had to let that settle, because then you could then pour the actual beer that came out of a separate barrel.
So do you think that's where it's come from?
And I think that the whole ritual has been passed down now that there's only the one keg.
Yeah.
And it's sort of nonsense. You could probably pour it in one and it'd be fine.
It's great marketing though, isn't it?
It really works, because you're like, I'm taking part in a ritual here.
Yeah. And I've worked in pubs before, and people are so like specific about it as well. Yeah. They're like, you've got to leave that for 90 seconds. It's like, look where we are. We're in the worst pub in Southwest London. You can't be that picky about this.
It can't be that important.
There would be one man who wanted, I think it was, he wanted his lager in a very specific glass for the bubbles, because he didn't like the bubbles, but he wanted it poured, the lager poured into one glass and then poured from that glass into another glass to get rid of as many bubbles as possible.
Right.
So he wanted flat lager. You're like, you've got to have a long, hard look at your life if that's where you're at.
And red wine features in the book too. You talk about being, for want of a better word, you're growing into a bit of a wine wanker.
Yes.
I too am probably a bit of a wine wanker, although without the budget to really be able to afford to do that.
Yeah.
But that's my drink of choice, would be red wine.
Yeah, and also it's a great diabetic choice as well.
It's a great choice.
Very, very low carb.
It's basically carb free,
yeah,
he said,
yeah.
Knowing full well that it's not. But it's not as bad as beer.
It's nowhere near as bad as beer. Beer, like, especially, Guinness is not as bad as other beers for me.
Yeah.
But will, like, shoot my blood glucose levels up and then send them crashing down. Whereas wine, this is a podcast about the book, right, rather than specific diabetes things. But red wine, I think, large glass of red wine, 5 grams of carbs, something like that.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I think you're pretty right. I always consider it to be basically like a free pass.
Yeah, totally.
You can drink as much of it as you want.
Until that massively backfires. And I will also drink wine at the same speed as I drink beer, which is very, very fast.
Problematic.
Yes.
Take me back to your childhood, if you will, because you say that you basically were into everything. Like, you wanted to taste stuff, and that's why you consider yourself to be a bit of a glutton.
Yes.
Tell me the kind of things that you would eat that maybe other children wouldn't have eaten.
Well, there's stuff in the book about me eating, you know, poached salmon and all of this. I just wanted to eat what the adults were eating. And also, I took it as a point of pride that I wasn't a fussy eater, like I think the majority of kids probably are fussy about stuff they eat.
Yeah.
But I think I saw that and saw the way adults reacted to that, as in they're a bit peeved, a bit annoyed. It's probably just me trying to be a bit of a people pleaser as well, to be like, well, I'm not that kid, I'm going to eat all of this. And then got a real love for food through doing that. I would just like, absolutely, yeah. Never had the kids' menu.
No.
And also it was about, it wasn't just that, it was about quantity as well, rather than...
Yeah.
So I would, you know, eat the sort of picker's basket was my favourite thing.
The what?
The picker's basket.
What's that?
From the brasserie on Wandsworth Common. Come on, do you not know the picker's basket? It's like a selection of all the starters in a big basket.
Right.
And I would eat that as my main course as a kid.
That's also one of my favourite things is when... Okay, so I have to confess to making a fool of myself at any hotel breakfast buffet.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, but there's everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to have everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, I did go to a restaurant once with my wife, very nice restaurant, and one of the options on the dessert menu was basically to have a little bit of all of the desserts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a bit like, can we live here?
Yeah.
Because that's my dream.
Yeah, yeah.
Is to have a little bit of
every
dessert. And there was literally like a little bit of cheesecake, a little panna cotta. And it was like a little mini version, actually. It wasn't a slice. It was like a little mini version of
all
the things.
See, that's great. Because like my worst thing is going to a restaurant and being like, well, I'll have that, but what if the other thing's nice and what if we don't come back here? I'll never experience that.
Exactly.
Can you say you've been to a restaurant unless you've eaten everything on the menu?
Exactly. So Picker's Basket sounds like the perfect starter.
Yeah, that's the dream.
And a little bit of everything is the perfect dessert.
Yeah.
What's the main course version of this that somebody hasn't invented yet?
I guess just eating all the main courses. I think it is the option. It is there. It's just most right-minded people steer clear of it.
Was there, as you say, you sort of like going through your life, you remembered stuff that you had kind of forgotten. Was there anything that was truly surprising when you were putting this book together?
I think just seeing the patterns of things and the reason why I do things. I think that thing I was just saying before was very interesting about my life of being like, I just want to sort of prove to people that I'm not trouble.
Yeah.
Like that I will eat anything and I will enjoy that. And quite how much of my life as well can be connected through food. Like obviously I was like, I'll write the book. I wrote out the idea and I thought it was a good one, but I didn't realize quite how much everything in my life does involve food in some way.
Yeah.
So it was a springboard to every single thing I wanted to talk about in a book anyway.
You're quite honest about the fact that obviously you were overweight, mm-hmm. and you made a decision to kind of do something about that. It was almost after the four pizzas incident that you were like, maybe need to ease up a little bit. But was there, you know, how hard was it to actually make that change in your life?
I feel like the mental shift was the hardest thing of deciding to do it and then deciding to make a lifestyle change. But the actual act of doing it wasn't that hard because, I think I say this in the book as well, but if you're doing nothing and then you do one thing, you immediately see results. The hardest thing for me was when I lost loads of weight and then, you know, you're putting a bit back on, whatever, but then trying to make changes when you are sort of doing everything sort of right. Making changes there is difficult.
Yeah.
But when I was like, wasn't exercising, was drinking loads, was eating loads, very sedentary lifestyle, just going like, oh, I'll probably start walking to that place rather than getting the bus or whatever, you immediately see results. So that was actually, it's actually a very exciting time where you're like, oh, I'm actually doing something. I've got willpower. I never knew I had willpower.
Yeah. But you started running and you started covering some quite serious distances when you were running.
Yeah, I'm a very obsessive guy as well. This is what I've also worked out through writing the book. If I get into something, I'm super into it. Like fully, for like 2 or 3 years, I'll be obsessed with something.
Yeah.
And then one day I wake up and go, nope. Not that anymore. And running was one of those things. So I started running and I was like, oh, I can do it. I had no idea I'd ever be a runner.
Yeah.
So then, you know, fully knuckled down. I was, you know, 5K, 10K. And then eventually they did London Marathon twice.
That's because I different got
days,
into...
Different days.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, I didn't come back again.
I started running during lockdown. I hate running. I think it's very boring. I had never run in my life.
Yeah.
And I did it just because of having something to do and then totally got into it because I found it very helpful mentally, actually, more than physically. But I've never, I did a 10K on my own and found that very painful and have never got close to even a half marathon, let alone a marathon. What's your advice to push on?
Well, if you want to, you just have to want to do it, I think, and just find a way of, like, I like that it's boring. That's what I really enjoyed about it. I could just put podcasts on or put music on and just absolutely think about nothing.
Yeah.
And also I think it's that obsessive quality that I have that I like seeing a training schedule. I just got a training schedule off the internet for the marathon and just building it up and then doing it. And I'd say the day of the London Marathon is incredible. Like, it's hard to beat that experience. Mm. You come out at mile 24 from under this tunnel thing and it's packed and people are just going absolutely crazy. It's an amazing feeling. And running along the parade at the end as well is just such a buzz.
I'm all for a buzz, but I don't know that I can motivate myself to run that far.
That's fair enough as well.
It's so far.
Well, just go down and watch.
Yeah, I can do that.
You can get the atmosphere.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, just be part of that. I'm going to move on to box three now.
Okay.
Again, same rules apply. There's an option A, there's an option B. I think I might be able to tempt you more with this than any other box so far.
Okay.
But maybe not.
I'm going A again.
That's going A again?
Yeah. That's the technique.
This was the sort of dessert course, although, as we know, dessert can always be cheese.
Yes.
And for those who are looking on the camera, you might not be able to see this. We have a cheese board, and we have dark chocolate.
Yes.
Again, the diabetic's choice, often dark chocolate. And this one, more than most, I have found so low in carbs, it's basically carb-free.
Yeah, it's just the higher the cocoa, the lower the sugar, really. Yeah. So
it's delish. Talk to me about cheese, because, as you say, as a child, there would often be a cheese block in the fridge with your teeth marks in it.
Yeah, I just used to eat it like a big apple, which never went down well with my mum. I mean, I love it. And even like this, like cheddar is just, I mess around with all the cheeses, you know.
Yeah.
But anyone who's like, oh, my favourite's brie or my favourite's this, you know, no, come on. Cheddar's the OG. Cheddar's the boy. And again, I was surprised by quite how much I wrote about cheese in the book. Think of all of the foods available to us all over the world. You know, we live in London, global city. And I spent a lot of the book talking about cheese and pizza. Sort of damaged my reputation as a foodie. But yeah. I mean, there's a whole section in the book of me putting together a football team, but as a cheese board.
Well, let's get on to that. I'm going to give you the option here, should you wish, to have some of this cheddar. There are biscuits, there are pickles, there is even some fig and fennel chutney. Are you a cheese and chutz kind of guy?
It's
a bit fancy. You're just like, I want the cheese.
I just want the cheese. I don't want to cut it with anything else.
Have cheese.
Yeah, I'm going to have a chunk of cheese.
I'll tell you, first of all, a great line I heard the other day, which was somebody who said, why do the French and Italians have so many different types of cheese? Mm-hmm. Because they haven't worked out how to make cheddar yet. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's a great line, because I love French cheese, I love Italian cheese, but there's
I have heard that before. And you said it in quite a delicate, artful way. I have had that said to me in a sort of quite Jeremy Clarkson way as well. The French oven, he's worked out how to make cheddar yet. Right. And that, I think there's mashing it over there, but that is truly just... Oh.
I think that, especially if you have a very mature cheddar, in the same way that if you eat a big chunk of Parmesan, you can get that thing where it does something to your jaw. It does make you literally kind of go, oh, yeah, come on.
We start drooling at the back, and
there's crystals in the cheese, and it's
love
like
it.
This is probably.
You start to feel like one of those big dogs, like the one from Turner and Hooch.
Yes, shoelaces of drool.
That's what I'll often do. I'll have a big chunk of cheese, and then I'll just shake my head around and.
Yeah, leave somebody else to tidy up after you. Your cheese board as a football team does make for interesting reading.
Yes,
particularly.
That's good. That's what I was aiming for.
You can put that on the...
Makes for interesting reading.
Waterstones. there are, I think, some good choices on your cheese board.
Yeah.
But then you do make the case for some additions to the cheese board.
Yes.
That you think are lacking, which I believe were feta, halloumi, and cheese strings.
Cheese strings.
Feta, I can go with.
Yeah.
Halloumi, I can definitely get with, but of course it has to be cooked, which doesn't make it great for a
cheese board. I have eaten it raw before, but...
Was it very squeaky?
Yeah, so squeaky. I mean, it's squeaky anyway, but pre-cooked is...
Just pure squeak.
You're cooking out a lot of the squeak, I'd say.
Okay. But cheese strings, I'm going to need some convincing.
I just think people are too snobby about cheese strings.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the biggest scientific achievements we've managed as the human race, turning it into string. It's amazing. Yeah.
Cheese strings.
I'd imagine there's similar minds working on both.
Yeah,
it's just, one of them has gone off in a different direction and decided to focus mainly on making dairy products fun to play with. I just think it'd blow people's minds if they got a cheese board and there was just a cheese string in the middle of it.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
Also, there's other cheese, there's like fancier cheeses, like there's Oaxacan cheese, like Mexican cheese, that is basically cheese string.
Okay.
And you put that in tacos and quesadillas and things like that. No one's complaining about that, you know. I just think it's all branding, right? I like the little guy on the front.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He's quite similar to the pepperami guy,
I
feel.
Yeah. I don't think they get on, though.
So, this is the thing, like, you put other things on a cheese board, like these little cornichons
Cornichons,
right. These cornichons came from a packet that also included little pepperami-type things.
Yeah.
And suddenly I was like, hang on a minute. Maybe we've been too harsh on pepperami.
We are. It's charcuterie. Comes in that weird salt bag.
Yeah.
But apart from that, delicious. But yeah, I think the pepperami guy and the cheese string, they're at opposite ends of the spectrum, really.
Is it just cultural snobbery that's keeping the cheese string off that cheese board?
Oh, definitely. Because it's also something that you put in kids' lunchboxes, right? Mm-hmm. That and the froob.
Yeah.
Any tube-based child product, I think people are a bit snobby
about. What about the Dairylea Triangle?
Now, again, I can't believe everything you're saying here. I do have something in the book about the Dairylea Triangle. I once ate 12 of them at school at the same time. I mean, I like a Dairylea Triangle. I think there's better spreadable cheeses out there.
Yeah.
I think they're not as convenient as a cheese string. I don't think the little red tab to get them out of the triangle shape is particularly useful. You end up with Dairylea on your hands.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's another cultural institution, really.
When you say you ate 12 in one sitting,
yeah.
From my memory, there's 6 in a full round of Dairylea.
Yeah.
So you're talking about 2 full rounds of Dairylea.
Yes, but it was at school dinner where they would put a big sort of dish of them out of the packet.
Yeah.
And me and someone else had a competition to see how many we could get into our mouths at the same time. So we just basically grabbed pockets full of them and went outside and straight in.
Did you win?
Yeah, but no one won.
No, there were no winners that
day. So claggy. There were only losers.
Can you still eat it now, having been through that experience?
Well, yeah, but I'd rather put it on a bit of bread than just go straight in the gob.
And you mentioned there that fig and fennel chutney, quite rightly, was probably a little bit poncy, but because you're a fan of cheese, literally just cheese.
I like the product, you know. Sometimes I'll put it on crackers. I quite like the sort of pickly elements to the cornichons as well, but I think if you're putting like a fig and fennel chutney on it, you're taken away. You're taken away from the cheese.
Is there not an element of alchemy here where something can bring something else to the cheese, maybe? The right partner?
Potentially, but it's not that.
Okay.
It's far too sweet.
Okay.
I think people get too... Also, that's the sort of... I've, you know, been given those before, and now and again you're like, oh, fancy a bit of that. And then that will sit in the fridge for 2 years and then I'll throw it out.
Do you have a fridge shelf like mine, which is 100% sauces and chutneys and things in jars that sit there for a while?
Absolutely.
Don't get used.
Hot sauces that are just...
Hot
sauces where I've gone... Yeah, maybe I can take a hot sauce called the Butt Burner 8000, and then you have one drop of it and go, absolutely not. Leave that in the fridge forever. I'm going to throw the whole fridge out.
Yeah, it needs decontaminating.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a Carolina Reaper sauce that has sat there, and it's not. There's not pleasant.
There's never a good time for that.
No. It's no good. In the book, you as I say, you sort of describe how you've gone on to become a bit of a foodie and discovered that, you know, that less is more and higher quality ingredients and all that sort of stuff. Do you have a partner in that with your partner that you both enjoy that sort of experience?
We definitely do. She's less obsessed with food, I'd say. Like, I'm very much the one driving the, let's go to this restaurant, this looks like a really exciting place, let's do this. And she's very happy to come along for the ride, but she will not put up with me talking about the food during the meal and going, oh, that's really interesting what they've done here. She's like, shut up. Talk about something different. We're eating the food. Let's take it as a given we like the food.
Yeah.
And we don't need to fully only discuss the food during the course of this entire meal.
We talk about something else.
Yeah. She's very open with me when I'm being a bit too sort of wanky about the food. So, yeah.
This is what you need in a partner.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need a good corrective. And then, obviously, you do get to talk about food in your podcast.
Yeah.
With James Acaster. Has that... I mean, that... has just been such a phenomenal success. Have there been favourite moments within the making of that podcast, things that other people have brought up in conversation that have made you go, oh, yes, that is...
Yeah, but it's very rarely the food-based things, I'd say. I think just because food's a really good entry point for someone talking about their lives or their weird little foibles or just whenever anyone says something that they think's normal, that they do or they think, and they try and skim over it. But me and James know each other so well now, we know when something's going to... very specifically make one of us laugh.
Yeah.
So it would normally be a moment like that when someone says something and me or James will go, what? Hang on. Go back to that. So the first one of those that was happening that I remember on the podcast was Serge from Kasabian saying that when he was a kid, he couldn't eat if there was a magician on the telly. Because he when he saw a magician's props, he just imagined they smelled really bad.
Okay.
So it's stuff like that where you're like, I've never heard anyone say that before. So we could talk about that for like 20, 25 minutes, you know. Yeah, it's all those moments are just so much fun. And they never stop because everyone's got something weird like that.
That is a very unique experience. Yeah. No one's hearing that and going, can totally relate.
Yeah. Although, you'd be surprised, we had messages from people going, oh, I completely understand that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of weird people out there.
Okay, that's good to know.
Thank God, because they're all listening, right?
Yeah. Ed, I'm sorry to have brought foods that were both traumatic and drink that was
borderline
abusive, given the state that you're in.
I think two little sips of that has sort of righted me.
Okay, good.
It was good. I just can't have any more of that.
That's fine.
Because then things are going to go down the same road.
I won't push you any further.
Thank you.
But it has been a delight to talk about Glutton. It was so much fun to read, and thank you for telling us a little bit more about it.
Thanks for having me.